Hi, I'm Chase Bunker, but you're not here for me. You're here for my guest. I know the song Bohemian Rhapsody because of this man. He is a Tony-nominated actor, singer, and former contestant on American Idol. You can see him at the Florida Theater on June 26th as part of the Jacksonville Rock Orchestra's A Night of Symphonic Rock. Tickets are on sale now. He is Constantine Maroulis. Constantine, how are you?
Whoa, what an introduction. I'm so good, dude. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks a lot for coming on. Now, first off, for those who don't know, what is A Night of Symphonic Rock?
Well, it's basically the chance to see where rock and roll and classical music kind of collides. An incredible, epic, cinematic-type show, really celebrating the classic rock songbook, the great songs we love, you know, from Journey and Queen and Kiss and everything, but told a very different way with the incredible orchestra at our back. These beautiful arrangements make them so epic, and you know, it's like we're hearing the songs anew again. So it's really exciting stuff to be a part of.
Nice. Now, you were introduced in my life via American Idol. I want to talk a little bit about that. You were in a band prior to joining American Idol. How hard was it leaving one band and then essentially playing with another that's with a bunch of people that you just don't know?
Yeah, you know, oh, wow, the good old days. And thank you, man. If you can believe it, I got to go back to Idol a couple of times recently and celebrating like 20 years since I was on the show with Carrie Underwood. It's really wild. And yeah, that was a great moment in the show's history. You know, I don't think they had ever done anything like that before, where I basically broke up with my band on TV, and it was a pretty fun moment. But honestly, you know, the actor in me took over. Like, I understood the weight of the storytelling, and we had really just a great time doing Idol, and the band went on to play more shows, and everyone sort of loves that memory for sure. Pray for the Soul of Betty was the name of the band. You know, I had, I'd basically just been kind of not renewed on the Broadway show Rent. I was touring the world with it, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I need a job and I have the band. And basically we just went on the Idol audition on a whim. You know, we took a Chinatown bus down to DC and just crashed the party, and I was in the right place at the right time. I had the right name, the right story and look, and they had just upped the age limit. So I was like sort of a grizzled, seasoned pro by then, you know, and what a ride it's been the last two decades, really. Now it's about the next 20 years. So I love celebrating those great songs I got to do on American Idol with the symphony, the Florida Theater, amazing venue. I love doing these sort of orchestral shows. I really do, because, you know, I consider myself both, you know, an actor and a rock singer kind of, you know, exclusively. And, you know, getting to kind of interpret these songs with this like epic, you know, backbone behind you is really thrilling for me. And I hope for the audiences as well.
Has it really been 20 years?
Yes, man. Actually, 21, if you want to feel even older.
Oh, geez.
Technically.
You're,
last year,
I can drink now.
Last season, we celebrated our 20 with Carrie. So this year, when I went back and did the show and all, it was 21. This year was Taylor Hicks' 20th and Daughtry's 20th, because they were after us the year after. So, yeah, it goes by fast, Buster. But I'm feeling good, you know. No drinking for me. Nearly 7 years. I lost a ton of weight, and my voice feels stronger and better than ever. And there's some exciting things coming up, and I'm really, really feeling good about this summer and the rest of the year. I'll be touring, you know, everyone check me out at Constantine Maroulis on the Instagram or ConstantineMaroulis.com. There's always fun stuff going on and new music and new projects, but this collaboration with the symphonies has been really exciting for me, and I hope to do it, you know, all over the world for sure.
Yeah, how did you come a part of this?
You know, some amazing musicians I've worked with. You know, it's funny sometimes. Some people are like, he probably won't want to do this, and it's like, just ask. And yeah, of course I want to do that. So I think it just kind of started with that. Like, the promoter is a really smart guy. and he books these different catalog shows all over the country, whether we're doing Led Zeppelin exclusively or the music of Journey exclusively, or this kind of, you know, night where there's a bit of everything, you know, celebrating all things classic rock and all the hits, and the band is exceptional. The other singer, the gal, she's unreal. So she'll rip all the, you know, the big female rock stuff. And we're going to have an amazing time. You know, the arrangements are great. We love Jacksonville. I've been there with my other Broadway shows and such. So I hope that same audience comes and checks it out.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, you're a Tony nominated actor. Were you always a fan of Broadway musicals growing up, or was this something that just kind of came later in life?
Yeah, great question. I think a lot of people assume that after Idol or something, I fell into acting. But no, I grew up as an actor, doing musicals, doing plays, making little movies, you know, as teenagers and such. And yeah, for sure. I love the medium. You know, I've gotten to do some really great stuff in the theater space, and I hope to continue to work on new stuff.
So I'm a very competitive person. You were nominated for a Tony for Rock of Ages, best leading mm-hmm. actor. You unfortunately didn't win. You should have won. I'm a little bit biased because, I don't know, maybe I'm talking to you right now. When you found out you didn't win, were you still at least feeling I at least was nominated, which is a big deal? Or were you just like angry at the end? You're like, no, I wanted to win this.
Oh, okay. Well, I too, very competitive, but there was no anger. There was no anger because these things are, I mean, how do you really measure, you know, the best performance? It's just so odd, the whole thing. And actually, it was an odd year in general because the Billy Elliots, that was a massive show that transferred from London, and they had three different boys covering the part of Billy Elliot. They would go on like two or three shows in a row each, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were nominated as one. So that was sort of like this story, right? And I think between me and really a few legends, you know, Brian D'Arcy James, Gavin Creel, who's no longer with us, J. Robert Spencer and I, like, we sort of like canceled each other out in a way. Like, those guys were huge performances also. But yeah, you know, our show ended up running the longest and really sort of probably impacting, in terms of that part, probably impacted the musical theater kind of, I don't know, stratosphere, hemisphere than maybe some of the other things did, you know, because it's just like everyone gets to play Drew now. But I guess not, you know, the other shows are massive too. Like, I mean, Next to Normal, Hair, Revival that Gavin was beautiful in, and Shrek was this monster fun show that was also kind of didn't last really, right? So
mm-hmm.
So Rock of Ages, you know, continues to get done all over the world in different languages and such, and Next to Normal as well. I mean, that won the Pulitzer, and Jay was great in that. I got to do that show in Houston, my own version of it, which was fun. So yeah, man, I mean, it's all sort of fluid. Like, I was so happy for the boys, but yeah, of course I wanted to win. But I think, yes, to answer the rest of your question, of course I was, I felt validated. I did. I think that a lot of people, yeah, they didn't realize I grew up as an actor, a musical theater geek, like that I really worked at this, that I went to the Boston Conservatory and Berklee College of Music, that I did the apprenticeships and, you know, did community theater for years and, you know, would take the train into the city multiple days a week with my resume and like my backstage, which was like the newspaper, like trying to find an agent as a teenager. Like, I was hustling always, you know, starting bands, working on projects, put my way through, you know, Boston and all that. And so, yeah, felt validated, you know, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, the Idol guy. But then it's like, yeah, he got a Best Actor Tony nomination and like all these other nominations for other awards and stuff. And well, then they want to find the reason why you got that. Well, is it really an acting role? You know, they kind of forget because they think you're playing the rock star. If you remember, you know, Drew is really like the wannabe, and like, you know, he's sort of like, he never does make it, but he sort of, you know, he discovers that it's about really finding love, right? And mm-hmm. not about like making it as a cheesy rock star. So that's why we rooted for him. So he really is like this grounded sort of presence in the show. He's not really a rock star. He gets to flash a little bit, but I think it was really like the grounded kind of, you know, affable character we created, Kristen and I, the director, and she was wonderful, and she was nominated as well. And it was just, you know, I think no one expected that show to be what it was. It was actually, like they said, a true artistic achievement. And now everybody's trying to do a jukebox type of thing and just cram a bunch of songs into something and try to create like magic again. And it just doesn't work that way, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. It's got to be about more than that. So, but so anyway, yeah. I mean, you always want to win, but I was there with my mom, who's also not with us anymore, and I'll always have those memories, and I hope to be back for sure.
Do you think that getting nominated for the Tony now has kind of shed that American Idol moniker a little bit?
In one way, yes. In many ways, no. I still think that, you know, it's like the Rock of Ages moniker is almost on the same level as the American Idol one. I mean, they even have the same kind of colored font and art, you know, so it's like you see the Rock of Ages black, you know, like, and white with the blue, and then you see the Idol thing, and it almost looks like they belong together. So I think that that's good. I'm glad that I'm synonymous and known for stuff. I do get cool opportunities to do things that are a little against the grain sometimes, but mostly you get called for like the cool rocker guy, you know, and you want to be able to do more than that. And there have been some really cool opportunities to do so. And maybe those just haven't come totally to fruition yet, like where it's like, whoa, like something so different. But yeah, I think it's good to be associated with certain things like that. And obviously I'm blessed, but you know, I think I'm in this new place right now, this new lane. And I hope to share that, you know, with a wide audience again, like I did with those projects.
What's scarier, performing in front of like America on a TV show or performing in front of Broadway and like in front of a bunch of theater snobs?
Ooh, probably the latter, because like, I you know, they sort of blend into the same thing, because I had to sort of rely on my theater stuff to get through the TV stuff on the Idol. I was recently out of drama school. I wasn't too long out, and we used to work on stuff like mixed focus and kind of, and you know, eye lines and stuff with camera and with, you know, where you're kind of work, you know, you're working the camera left and right, and then you're looking into the camera, but you're also like kind of presenting to the in-house audience, right? There was like a thing to it, man. There was a thing to it. And I got pretty good at it quick. And that's why everyone kind of, remember I used to be on Talk Soup all the time. Joel would rage on me on my camera moves and mm-hmm. all that. And like, that was iconic stuff. So, yeah, I think that like you learn to sort of, tell a story, you know, like a beginning, middle, and end. You know, when we would work on songs like script and score in class and stuff, you have to get up and basically act a song, which, you know, is like a scene. So I would kind of do that with Idol. But then conversely, like if you're in a show that you know everyone is like loving, mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing like that. Dress. Invited dress is what you're speaking of. Invited dress is on Broadway is a big deal, because that's like the night you basically get to bring your friends, and then a lot of now influencer types and all of them come, and it's like that free night, you know. And yet it's like you haven't had an audience yet, you know, and they're going to be your first audience. So it's either going to be lit or you're going to feel like the you know, and that makes you like aware. And then if you're aware, you're not in it, you're not locked in, you're not in the bubble, you know, like, so if you're like aware and you like see people, you know, that's when it can get dangerous. And that's when that's when like it can, you know, your breath and your nerves and whatnot can kind of swallow you. Even 30 years into like, you know, working basically for me, you know, since I'm like 20 years old, probably really professionally working. Mm-hmm. So it can take you right back to like fourth grade when you get up there in front of the class and you have to sing a solo and you choke it. And basically it could take you right back there.
I was talking with Eddie Ortega about that. He's doing a Hamilton and touring with them, and he was talking about the white space where you just like blank. I believe, have you ever had those moments?
Yes. Yeah. That's a good term for it. I like that. The white space. It's this, it's just like you're floating, in nothingness for a moment. And, you know, and, but then you really do, and not to be all actory, but that's when you have to grab onto like that sense memory, you know, that's where it helps to really make those connections in the rehearsals and all of those things. So when you do look down at the bar or whatever it is, it takes you to that place like, oh man, it smells like the first day I walked in here, and then it can bring you right back in. And like you put your hand on it, it feels like this, the first day I walked into this place, you know, whatever. And you got to get back, you know? I mean, obviously people drop lines, people F up, and that happens, you know, and I've done it. And, you know, there are like the Robin Williams gods out there that can just ad lib something and get out of anything. But you know, there's these moments like where it's probably not appropriate too, to do that. Like, maybe it's a serious piece or something, and you can't allow the audience to kind of, you know, to like break that wall. Right. So I don't know. It's every actor's different until you're in it too. What do they say? Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face, you know, mm-hmm. in the ring. So, you know, you might have handled it one night one way, but then another night there's something totally different. But I think you just kind of reach for those tools when you can.
You can see him at the Florida Theater on June 26th as part of Jacksonville Rock Orchestra's A Night of Symphonic Rock. Tickets are on sale now. Constantine, before I let you go, I want to ask you the same 10 questions I like to ask all my guests here, inspired by the late, great James Lipton. Are you ready?
Heck yes.
All right, here we go. What is the most played song on your playlist?
I Want Someone Badly, Jeff Buckley.
What's your guilty pleasure band?
Def Leppard.
Favorite song you like to belt it out to, no matter how good or how bad you sound?
Shallow.
By Magnolia Park?
No, Shallow, the Lady Gaga, A Star Is Born.
Oh, anyway. Oh yeah. I should have known. I should have known
gotta
that.
Sing the, you got to sing the Lady Gaga part. I mean, it's high, bro. It's like up there. You know.
Oh,
like
I'm not even going to try
belting.
To touch that.
No, it's not. Oh, never stop. Yeah, it's like nuts. So like just full out sometimes, like in the car. It's kind of the new I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston joint. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, it's a Dolly Parton song. Yeah.
But yeah.
It's like when that one comes on. Yeah.
Is that a song that came on that you were just like, man, if this came out during Idol, I would have crushed this?
I think of that a lot. I think of that scenario a lot. You'd be surprised. I think it was really the first few years that I was tormented by it, maybe. And I was like, but you have to remember, back then we couldn't clear songs. Like, it was just all very new. Nobody expected. I mean, the show went into the stratosphere in those first couple weeks of our season. Like, they had obviously very successful season 1, 2, and 3, but it just went to a different galaxy come season 4, where they like, they just rolled out these massive sponsors, and the money and the viewership was just nuts. But it was like the digital age was just really starting, you know, iTunes and such. Mm-hmm. And they were still protective over catalog stuff. Like Bon Jovi's like, I don't know if I want them to do my song, not realizing at the time that like, even if Sanjaya hammers your song, it's going to be huge for the spike and the digital, you know, just kind of spike and everything, right? Like it'll just, it, everyone will go back to your original again. And, but not that he needs it, but so a lot of people were not like, no one really knew, you know, the impact of like these songs could be. So they were protective. So there's really like a pretty strict cleared list. And then on the, most occasions you had to go out to try to clear the song. And that's what happened to me the night I went home. I couldn't get the U2 song I wanted, which I had this whole sick performance, like all planned out for Beautiful Day, which was like, obviously huge song at the time. And, you know, they were all over the Apple commercials and stuff, U2, and, you know, they were doing the big Apple campaign, if you remember. And, mm-hmm. you know, I had that, this whole sick thing with like backlighting, and anyway, it didn't come through. And then I'm like, oh, so I had to bust a move, and then I got the Nickelback song. And actually the Nickelback song is really hard because, to believe it or not, and it's a great, great jam. I think Nickelback is finally getting appreciated for being awesome. And, but it's got these weird intervals, you know, I've been down, I've been wrong, been to the bottom of every bottle. It's just like, dun, dun, and it's got this thing and like, you know, it's like kind of like a weird chord. And if you don't hit it, like it sounds a little weird. And I think I just didn't nail the performance. And I was like, I'll be fine. I'll just do this Nickelback song. That's kind of like cake. And it was like, dupe, you're off the show. So, you know, there you have it.
That's crazy that I didn't realize that you had to deal with rights issues during all. So we can blame Bono for you being eliminated?
Bono, it's basically Bono's fault. Yeah. And maybe probably the Edge as well. Yep, him.
Oh, man.
No, I love the, I mean, man. Now that's a band that I often don't mention when people ask me, like, but oh, the early U2 when I was like a kid. And the beginning of MTV starts to happen, and it's like, you know, the early 80s, and they come out like, you know, New Year's Day video was mm-hmm. just like very cool. And I didn't know what was, and his voice was just amazing. I was just like, could someone really sing that well? Like it was, I remember thinking like, okay, I know music, and you know, at the time you hear like the Billy Joel songs, you know, you may be right, I may be crazy, but it's like, you know, he's just so, but then you hear this whole different thing, right? And you're like, wow, Bono's voice was just unreal. So anyway, yeah, I kind of fell into those records from like my brother and sister. They were older, so.
Now I'm kind of
early U2 and all U2 is amazing.
I'm kind of mad now that like we were deprived of that, because I feel like, yeah, you would have killed Beautiful Day.
Well, think of the change. Touch me, take me to that other place, teach me, you know I'm not a... It's that whole back end part that just rips, mm-hmm. and the place would have been jumping, because it's one of those songs that met rock, pop, but it was like club. It was like, had like this club kind of global sound to it too, and we hadn't really heard that, and the whole beginning is so like fierce, mm-hmm. and we had a great cut of it. It would have been sick, and I wanted to do it in all like white on white, you know, and come out with the shades on, and like, yeah, I was like, I really had it all sorted out, but it's all good. Like I thought, you know, but honestly, dude, I think, and I know I'm not supposed to say this, and I've said it maybe once. No one's ever, you know. But it was just great television. Free-falling me off the show the next week. I was never in the bottom three. I was a popular name. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some stuff going on Dateline, on the other network, like with one of the contestants prior and maybe Paula or something. I don't know. They were running that whole thing. And then I went home that week and it was like front page of everything. And it just kind of, I mean, we see it now how people knock things out of the news, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that it was just great television. And I think, buddy, I think like if I had like crept into the top three and it was like me, Bo and Carrie, and like as kind of expected, I don't know if it would have been as dope for me. Like Von Zell ended up getting that kind of thankless slot, And I think that it would have just, I don't know. I think for me, it really helped create this underdog thing, and finishing a couple spots later was not going to make any big difference to me, I don't think. I mean, I guess I would have technically been like given a record deal, but none of that stuff is, you know, yeah. I mean, they could rip it up during, in the middle of the tour if they wanted to and be like, yeah, we're not doing this. And so, you know, they didn't know what to do with me at that point, but they knew that, you know, there was like all this stuff that came in. Remember, I was going to do like the TV show at ABC and GramNet and yeah. Kelsey Grammer and all that stuff. And then I met the Rock of Ages. You know, it's like, so there was this blackout period where I couldn't put out music and couldn't do stuff because Carrie and Bo were focused, you know, they were focused on that. So there's just like kind of weird stuff. But I think finishing early, like, basically helped me create Drew in Rock of Ages. Like, I, like, that's the guy. Like, oh, you should have won, dude. You should have won. So I need my next I should have won kind of moment, and I'm working on that, you know? And but I think that that really helped fuel the Rock of Ages kind of winning kind of vibes, you know? It was like, yeah. That's the guy that we rooted for, and now we're rooting for him again, and he keeps screwing this up, but excuse my language. So that helped. You know, anyway,
yeah,
the underdog, man. You always want to be the underdog.
We'll get back to the questionnaire in just a little bit. I feel like though with rockers, with when it comes to American Idol, the rockers getting eliminated, it might be better for them than winning it all. Like, I don't know if that's crazy for me to think, but I feel like it's better.
I think by the next year they had, I mean, those 2 years were just packed with people. I mean, you had me, Carrie and Bo then, fine, and then you had, you know, Taylor, Cat McPhee. You had Daughtry the next year, but he finishes like fifth or sixth.
Mm-hmm.
You had like Ace Young and Bucky Covington and like some people. Oh, Elliot Yameen actually had a big hit. So you had like those 2 years in a row. And obviously Taylor has been around forever, dude, and he's still doing stuff. And Cat with Dave Foster and all that. But like with Daughtry, they were like, yeah, we're getting him right in the studio. The rules. The rules. We're not fumbling this bag right here. And he was just so ready, and he had songs already.
Mm-hmm.
He had songs. I mean, Home was his song.
Yeah.
And then like, so, you know, done. And then the first record has got like a bunch of hits on it, and they just did it right. But so it's their rules until you meet someone that you want to break in.
Yeah, I just remember when Daughtry got eliminated, my U.S. history teacher, just like before she even started class, she goes, I'm still angry about American Idol. Why is Daughtry eliminated? And it's like, we just had this discussion. Like, I feel like that was another one that people were like, wait, why did this happen? But I remember when he got eliminated that they were talking about him being the new lead singer of Fuel because he just did Hemorrhage earlier that season.
And the best thing he ever could have done is not do that because, mm-hmm. You know, he was, they just did the whole Daughtry record, the whole rollout, the whole thing, aces. I don't know what to tell you. Like it was perfect from like the moment he got booted off the show and good morning. And you know, and he had the songs to back it. So that's just it. Like it was just so great. And he's also, you know, he's just a fantastic guy and super talent and a great dad. And we lost a little touch. But I love what he's doing now. Like, I mean, he's just evolved into this other space now, too. I kind of liked him in the more like songwriter with the edge, more Bon Jovi type stuff, you know, that he was doing early, let's say,
mm-hmm.
With the rock and the badassery. This modern rock thing is kind of amazing though, with like the production and stuff and all the collabs he's doing. I mean, I think with Chris, it's fun. It's like, I think he would like to do some of the kind of theater stuff I get to do. And I would like to do more of the, I want to tour with my band and my music stuff, you know? Yeah. I mean, I hope that we get to do something together one day. I think that would be really fun for me.
Yeah, that'd be awesome to see you two like either go out on tour or do some sort of collaboration together.
That would be cool for sure, yes.
All All right, we'll get back to the questions. What is your drink of choice?
Club soda with a lime.
Favorite superhero?
Batman.
Favorite internet video?
Put on the tree. Put on the tree. The tree. Put on the tree. Go put on the tree. Yeah.
What
also,
do you?
Also, my son's gay by the same performer. My son's gay. And go check that out. This is old. This is really old. Okay.
Oh, it's so old, but it's so good. Yeah. What are you streaming right now on your streaming platforms?
Oh, I just consume. I'm a consumer. They should come to me for talk for some notes. Come to me for some notes. You know, it's funny, man. Even as an actor, last summer, if you knew like the three or four projects I was really close to booking like big arcs on, I think you'd be like, holy smoke. And for whatever reason, you know, in the mix, on hold, just fell through fine. But like, I want to be back in those rooms real bad because it's just what I love. And it's been a little quiet since, and that's just how it works in this game. So in terms of like me, what I'm observing, what I'm watching, non-scripted, I started Outlast, which is actually by Jason Bateman and his production company. It's like a survival kind of docu-series competition show, which I think is pretty cool. It's well done. The first couple of seasons are really good. It's not Alone. I love Alone so much. Alone is the most demented show that's ever been. I mean, they teach these incredible survivalists how to basically film themselves. They don't know how to use cameras. So they have to film themselves. They have nothing. There's no one there. And they're doing like 100 days in the deepest bowels of Alaska that you've ever imagined.
Oh my gosh.
And they I mean, it's just wild. So the study of like the behavior and is crazy to me. So, but I had to do a rewatch of Game of Thrones OG because everything was kind of crap for a little while. So I'm still into that. I'm kind of psyched for House of the Dragon to start. Friends and Neighbors is cool. A lot of friends on that. Gotta love Jon Hamm. I was also rewatching Mad Men, which is godlike. You know, a lot of Yankees. It's funny. Everyone's like, the Knicks. And I'm like, okay, let me just give you my Knicks thing.
Okay.
Everyone knows I'm a diehard sports fan. Mm-hmm. My Yankees. I mean, you have to, my age when I was in the, you know, when I was a kid, it was baseball cards and baseball. That was number one in the 80s, right? Number one. By the 90s, things had shifted to basketball, like when I'm in high school, right? And to like Jordan and all of that. So when I was coming up, like I'm from the city, but I grew up in Jersey. So I was like always torn between the Nets and the Knicks. They were terrible. So I just kind of went with it. I wasn't a big Patrick Ewing guy, but then I saw Jordan play. And I was like, oh, my God. I even saw him play against the horrible Nets with Buck Williams. And nobody there. Like, he's like a second-year player. I mean, but anyone that was there to see Jordan. But it was starting to build the whole Jordan thing. Like, and he was like this mythical character. Like, we couldn't see him. Like, they didn't show him on TV like they learned to do later. And, you know, you had to like wait for the highlight to come around on SportsCenter, which was really old at the time, or watch Inside the NBA with Ahmad Rashad on Saturday just to get a glimpse of him. Like it was really that level, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I just bought into Jordan like in the mid 80s when he comes into the league and watches the Bulls, you know, watch the Bulls like create this amazing team around him and the coaches and the run. And of course, we've seen The Last Dance on Netflix, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. So I never was into the Knicks. Like, they're cool. They're the Knicks. They're the city. But, you know, so I'm happy that everyone's happy, all these fair weather fans. But I'm not really into the Knicks. I know. I'll probably ride the fair weather train though a little bit. I can do that. I could do that.
It's one of those where like I'm happy for like the players, but then like you see like the actual Knicks fans like, oh yeah, that's right. That's why a lot of people don't like the Knicks.
Yeah. They're charming. I think that's what we love about them, that they are, they were always like the team that they would get so close. But now that the champs, it's weird, but good for them. I tease my friends in the chat that are like diehard. And I was like, of course the Knicks win it all. When like, I feel like overall basketball is down heavily, right? Like no one cares really about what's going on. I think overall the players are flopping and whining, and some of them are these max contracts that are demented. Mm-hmm. and missing so many games. You think Michael Jordan would ever miss games? Never. Kobe Bryant, never. You'd have to drag them off the court. So I just don't like this like whole load management mentality. I think it's and I think the game, it sucks. And Steph Curry is the greatest shooter that has ever walked, but he basically ruined the game I love, because he came in and it just became a 3-point contest the entire game. And, but as you see, the Knicks won because they're like a full team. They got 10 guys. They use all their fouls. They switched up to a little bit more old school basketball right before the playoffs, and they just outlasted everyone, and they were hot. But I feel like they would just like be another team in the 90s. Like they wouldn't even be like Jordan would just cut through them like cake. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. We would destroy them.
Oh yeah.
But I'm psyched for I'm psyched for everyone. And there's a good vibe in the city. I'll tell you, I'm there all the time, heading mm-hmm. there later again. There's a real, real good vibe. And I think New York in general has taken a lot of crap in the news. Like it's the worst place to live. It's a hellhole. That is not true at all. But yeah, some wild, you know, you're from Jacksonville, some crazy stuff going on there too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the city is bustling and it's exciting for sure.
It also helped that the Knicks played the Atlanta Falcons of basketball, apparently, because like every time there was like a double digit lead with 2 minutes left, the Spurs just turned into the Falcons. You're like, oh, let's just blow this lead.
Unreal. I've never seen that before. Now, some people are saying it was scripted that way. I guess because allegedly it's in the certain files that are out there in the galaxy that it was predicted that the Knicks would win. I'm like, what? Is this Biff in Back to the Future 3 like predicting with his sports almanac? You know, that mm-hmm. this is odd, but it was right there. It predated the whole playoffs, so it could be true. Let's see.
And finally, Constantine Maroulis, give me your spiciest hot take. It could be about anything in life.
Wow. Yeah, man. Wow. That's like knocking me over right now. Well, I think it's about really keeping it simple, man. And I think at 50 and feeling really good and confident in my skin, I think it's about keeping things simple. And I learned that as my parents got old, and you wanted to spend quality time with them and you wanted to be there for them, and you know, they would try to communicate, and you just would try to keep things simple, talk about things that they could talk about as well, and just keep it simple and enjoy that time and kind of just circle the wagons and really enjoy those loved ones around you while you have them. And obviously work is important, and I love being a part of great work, but it's really just about like family and keeping it simple. And I have a tendency to let my anxiety and my emotions overcome me, but I think being clean from alcohol all these years and learning to like really find a healthy co-parenting place with my ex and my daughter and all of that, it's about keeping it simple. Like just making a little list, checking off the boxes each day, like trying not to get too far ahead, because I can do that. I have a tendency to think too far ahead or overanalyze things. And I think, like, that's it. Simple. And go for walks. You know, if you just walk it off, like what they used to tell us in sports, dude, walk it off, walk it off. You know, like you get hit with a pitch, you walk it off. I think that walking and keeping it real simple can basically solve everything. So that's the hot take right there. That's hot sauce.
I can get behind that. You can see him at the Florida Theater on June 26th as part of the Jacksonville Rock Orchestra's A Night of Symphonic Rock. Tickets are on sale now. Constantine Maroulis, thanks a lot for coming on.